Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Spaceflight This Week, a NASA Spaceflight podcast. I'm News Director Thomas Burkhart, here to offer a quick recap of spaceflight news for the week of February 27th, 2023. We begin with news of a spaceflight company merger. VAST, the space station development company founded in 2022, has acquired the small launch startup Launcher. VAST aims to build an artificial gravity space station in low Earth orbit and will now be able to leverage Launcher's Orbiter space tug vehicle to test technologies for that station. The Orbiter program will continue to support its current and future space tug service customers. Launcher's first Orbiter vehicle, SN1, was launched on the SpaceX Transporter 6 mission earlier this year, but failed to deploy its customer payloads due to an attitude control issue. More Orbiter missions are planned for this year. Development of Launcher's E2 engine will also continue, with the goal of offering the engine to other launch providers, but development of the Launcher Light rocket has been terminated. The former CEO of Launcher, Max Hout, is now the president of VAST. For updates on new launch vehicles nearing their debuts, we start with Relativity Space's Terran 1. The Good Luck, Have Fun mission, which is the rocket's first orbital launch attempt, has an official launch date of March 8th. A 3-hour-long launch window opens at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. The mission will lift off from Launch Complex 16 at Cape Canaveral, and the entirely 3D-printed rocket could become the first methane-fueled rocket to reach orbit if the flight is successful. Another new Methalox rocket also now has a launch date. In an update from CEO Tory Bruno this week, United Launch Alliance announced it's targeting May 4th for the first launch of Vulcan. A 4-day window opens on that day. While ULA currently expects technical readiness for the launch to occur in mid-April, trajectory requirements for the Peregrine moon lander on board push the launch window until May 4th. The vehicle will soon roll out to the pad at Space Launch Complex 41 for at least one taking test, followed by at least one wet dress rehearsal, and then a flight readiness firing. The flight readiness firing will be conducted at 70% power for 3.5 seconds. The pacing item for both that firing and the launch is qualification of the BE-4 engines. Testing on those engines was paused when an oxygen pump overperformed by about 5% during acceptance testing. This is now understood to be within normal unit-to-unit deviation, and acceptance testing is being resumed now ahead of qualification testing. Bruno said this issue would not likely have appeared in flight, as it was only detected near the extremes of the flight envelope. The Peregrine lander, Kuiper satellites, and Celestis payloads are all expected to be ready for that May 4th launch. The Starliner crew flight test is still slated to launch on Atlas V first, and the launch manifest after Vulcan's debut is being evaluated. A few months of separation are expected between the first two Vulcan launches. Tory Bruno also spoke to the upcoming National Security Space Launch solicitations and the small satellite launch market. With an increase in demand for a launch from mega constellations and a decrease in supply due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, removing Russian launchers from the commercial market, Bruno says the US military's block buy strategy is important to assuring manifest spots for government payloads. He says heavy lifters will take the bulk of the small satellite launch market, but there are enough important missions to support one or two dedicated small launchers. Moving on now to international space programs, the Soyuz MS-23 mission made its journey to the International Space Station this week. The spacecraft launched uncrewed to replace the damaged Soyuz MS-22 spacecraft on Thursday. The Soyuz 2.1A rocket successfully launched from Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, and the spacecraft successfully arrived at the orbiting complex on Saturday. While the damaged Soyuz MS-22 vehicle returns to Earth empty, its crew members will spend an extra 6 months on the ISS before returning aboard MS-23. In China, after over a month without a launch due to holidays, China's space program returned to action on Thursday. Two missions were launched on that day, the first being a Changzheng 3B rocket from the Zhicheng Satellite Launch Center. This flight carried the Zhongxing 26 communications satellite to geostationary transfer orbit. The second flight was launched on a Changzheng 2C rocket from the Jiuquan Satellite Launch Center, carrying the Horus 1 remote sensing satellite to sun synchronous orbit. While not officially announced as such, it is believed that the Chinese-built spacecraft is owned and operated by Egypt. First thing at SpaceX this week, the Crew-6 mission made its first launch attempt early Monday morning, but a hold and scrub were called in the final minutes of the countdown. After a completely nominal countdown, including ingress of the four crew members and propellant loading of the rocket, an issue with the T-TEB ignition system for the 9 Merlin engines on Falcon 9's first stage required a scrub. Due to weather conditions and ISS phasing requirements, the next launch attempt will be made no earlier than Thursday at 12:34 a.m. Eastern Time. A pair of Starlink launches are also slated for this week. At the time of this recording, the Group 6-1 mission is scheduled for 6:13 p.m. Eastern Time Monday evening. This mission is the first to carry Starlink version 2 satellites, with 21 such spacecraft on board Falcon 9. These satellites include upgraded antennas and new maneuvering thrusters fueled by argon rather than krypton. These new thrusters offer both greater thrust and specific impulse. The new satellites are more capable than the version 1.5 satellites being launched recently, even though less satellites can be launched per flight. After this flight, as early as Tuesday, another batch of version 1.5 satellites will launch on the Group 2-7 mission from Vandenberg, California. In McGregor, Texas, the tripod test stand has been upgraded to support longer Raptor engine test firings, recently setting a new record with a 194-second long firing. And in Starbase, the second replacement hydraulic power unit has been installed on Booster 7. Work to protect the orbital launch mount and booster quick disconnect has also continued at the orbital launch site, while Ship 26, the vehicle with no flaps or heat shield, underwent cryogenic testing at the suborbital site. The more complete Ship 25 was removed from the suborbital site and moved back to the structural test site. The ultimate fate of both of these ships is not currently known and may be affected by the outcome of the first orbital launch attempt, still scheduled for as early as next month. That's all for your recap of spaceflight this week. Check out our other podcasts, subscribe to us on YouTube, or visit NASAspaceflight.com for more spaceflight news.